As always, thanks for listening in today to our Friday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today we will be continuing our study in Exodus, so let's join Pastor Dave now.
Soon your trials will be over.
Exodus chapter 28. We are going to show a slide here of the high priest and the breastplate so you can kind of see it again. Okay. We'll be going over a little bit of the blue robe right here, but this is the checkered thing here along with the breastplate. This is what is called the ephod, okay? And we've been going over it the last couple weeks or so. Here on the breastplate, here are the different jewels that kind of go across the breastplate according to the tribes. And so we have Reuben and Simeon and Levi, and it just kind of goes down row after row. And so, and they also have the names up here as well of six tribes on the shoulder, six tribes on the other shoulder. So the priest is there to carry the tribes of Israel on his shoulders, to have them close to his heart, okay, as he represents God to the people and the people to God. And so as he represents God to the people, he is showing that God is the one that's going to lift him up on the shoulders. God is the one that has him close to his heart, okay? And so this word breastplate is a Hebrew word, is hoshen, and it means contain or sparkle, okay? Now remember, as we read here, in verse 29 of chapter 28, so Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment. So it's called the breastplate of judgment. So if we can see the previous slide again. So how does this work? How do we get judgments or decisions from God through the stones here? I want you to write this down, because this is very important. This is how. We don't know. Now, I'm going to bring to you what a lot of people think, you know, what the majority thought is behind this. That when you want an answer from the Lord and you go to the Lord, these stones begin to shine. And so, kind of like, and again, understand you'd go right to left, but because this is in English, I'm going to go left to right, okay? But if this was to, let's say, Reuben here, if this was to, if we were to try and get a message from God, this would like light up like one time. If it lit up one time, that means you're supposed to take the R there, Reuben. If it was to light up four times, then you would take the B there. Do you remember the old flip phones? Show the flip phone. Remember the old flip phone right there? Come on. What, you still have one? Okay, so I loved them. I thought they were great. I did like them. But remember when you were going to send a text message? What you would have to do if you start off the letter B of the text, you'd have to hit the number 2 there twice, right? And then you'd have to do, I have a T, so you hit the number 8 button there once for the T. And so that's how you would do a text, okay? You would hit it twice. You would hit this number 3 times, this one twice, this one once, and you'd spell out words. It would be the same thing when it came to the actual breastplate, okay? Could we go back to that one again, the first one? So again, these would light up, and it would blink so many different times, so you would take that letter, all right? Now, this next slide here, this is Reuben. This is his name in Hebrew, all right? And so it is Resh, Aleph, Vav, Vet, and Nun. Reuven is Reuben. So if it blinked once, then it's the letter Resh. If it blinked 3 times, it's the letter Vav. And so on and so forth until you would have a word there, and then it would go on to the next one, and this is how you would get your message from the Lord, possibly. Now, verse 30 of Exodus 28 says this, "And you shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be over Aaron's heart, which he goes in before the Lord. So Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel over his heart before the Lord continually." Now, the Urim and the Thummim, they're not made with human hands. We have nowhere in God's word that it tells us that Bezalel or Aholiab, the one that God gave wisdom to be able to do all the artistic things and all the designs and all the things that need to happen in the tabernacle, which God gave them special wisdom to know how to make these things and stuff like that. We're never told that they made the Urim or the Thummim. Okay, and so nobody knows what the objects of the Urim or the Thummim are. Many have speculated that the Urim and the Thummim is what, and remember that these two objects or whatever they are placed in the pouch behind the breastplate. So when we went over it last week, we saw that it was a kind of a 9x9 material. They doubled it and they folded it over. So you have this pouch behind the breastplate. This is where the Urim and the Thummim went. And it's interesting that they think that somehow this has something to do with lighting up the breastplate. Which is interesting because when you look up the word Urim in Hebrew, it means Duracell, which I thought was interesting. I thought, it's a couple of batteries, the Urim and the Thummim. But the Urim means lights. It means lights. So somehow, this has something to do with illumination, okay? Thummim is actually tumim, and it means perfections. This is a device that God uses to make decisions, and they're perfect decisions because they're decisions from the Lord. We don't know what these devices are, but they are possibly some small objects that are placed there behind the breastplate, designed to somehow bring about decisions of the Lord. Now, when you read again in verse 30, it says, you shall put in the breastplate of judgment, the Urim and the Thummim. And then in Leviticus 8:8, it says, then he put in the breastplate on him, the Urim and the Thummim in the breastplate. So this is a place where it goes. Now, when it comes to the description of the Urim and the Thummim, When that is brought up, it's only like in 6 or 7 verses in the rest of the Bible that you read of these objects, okay? And there are some things that we can learn as we read about them, okay? And it's very, very interesting. So in Numbers 27:21a, it says, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire before the Lord for him by the judgment of the Urim. And there, after Aaron dies, his son Eleazar is the high priest now. Joshua is now the new leader of Israel. And there he's going to stand before the Lord, directed by the judgment of the Urim. In Deuteronomy 38:8, it says, and Levi, he said, let your Thummim and your Urim be with your Holy One. Moses is handing out blessings over the tribes of Israel before he died, and he committed to the tribe of Levi the Urim and the Thummim. 1 Samuel 28:6. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him either by dreams or by Urim, by the prophets. So Saul's disobedience towards God, God refused to answer him when he went to inquire of him about whether he should go to battle with the Philistines. In Ezra 2:63 as well as Nehemiah 6:5, they both say the same thing. It says, and the governor said to them that they should not eat of the most holy things till a priest could consult with the Urim and the Thummim. Interesting. Both Ezra and Nehemiah would not eat of the holy things until a priest could give them a direction through the Urim or the Thummim. And so we have a little bit of a glimpse there of all the different times it was used. But there is one other time. And I want you to go over here to 1 Samuel chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14. Now, I'll give you a little context of what's going on. Jonathan and his armor bearer, in a great step of faith, began to do this great slaughter of the Philistines. When Saul hears the commotion in the Philistines' camp, they realize it's Jonathan and his armor bearer, and they go to join him. But before they go and join him in pursuing the Philistines, Saul puts his army under an oath not to eat anything that day until he has vengeance on his enemies. Well, Jonathan didn't get the memo, and so he's out in the forest. He sees some honey there, and so he takes some of that honey and he eats it, and then someone comes along and says, you're not supposed to do that. Your dad said. Well, he didn't hear that, okay? And so later on that night, Saul seeks counsel from God if he should continue to pursue the Philistines. God doesn't answer Saul, and so Saul believes it's because someone has sinned and disobeyed his order. And so here in verse 36 of chapter 14 of 1 Samuel, it says, "Now Saul said, 'Let us go down under the Philistines by night, plunder them until morning light, and let us not leave a man of them.' And they say, 'Do whatever seems good to you.' Then the priest said, 'Let us draw near to God here,'" meaning let's consult God, okay? "So Saul asked counsel of God, 'Shall I go down after the Philistines?'" Well, if the priest is there, he's probably there with the ephod. He's probably there with the breastplate there. And so he asked the question, "Do I go down after the Philistines? Will you deliver them into the hand of Israel?" But he did not answer him that day. So Saul says, "Come over here, and all you chiefs of the people, and know and see what this sin was for today." So he thinks the reason that God isn't answering him is because someone has sinned and disobeyed his order. And it says, "For as the Lord lives, who saves Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But not a man among all the people answered him." So he's saying, whoever sinned, he's going to die, even if it's Jonathan my son, and he doesn't know yet. Some people did, but they weren't going to give Jonathan up, okay? And so he goes on, he says, "Then he said to all Israel, 'You be on one side, my son Jonathan, and I will be on the other side.'" So again, so he takes Jonathan and himself, puts the rest of the people, because he's pretty sure it's not Jonathan. It's got to be someone else, you know. And then it says, and they say, "Do what seems good to you." "Then Saul said to the Lord God of Israel, 'Give a perfect lot.' So Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped," meaning the people, whatever is happening here, the people are innocent, and now it's between Saul and Jonathan, okay? The interesting thing here, when it says "give a perfect lot," the word "lot" there, you'll notice, is italicized, right? That means it's not in the original. They place it there to give you an understanding of what's going on here. The word "perfect" here is very, very interesting, okay? The word "perfect" here is actually tumim. It's the thummim, okay? And to cast it, it says after this, it says, "And Saul said, 'Cast lots between Jonathan and me.'" The word "cast" there is naphah, and it means to fall to the ground. So whatever the tumim is, or the urim, it is something that you cast to the ground. Probably like lots. Okay, they cast to the ground, and somehow it gave a decision of who it was that sinned, or sinned in the way of disobeying Saul's order. And it fell towards Jonathan. Okay, it fell towards Jonathan. But the people weren't about to give Jonathan up, all right? So one of the things that we notice here is that whatever the tumim is, it falls to the ground, meaning you cast it on the ground. That's why they put "lot" there in italicis, okay? Because somehow you pull something out and you drop it to the ground, and as it rolls, it is going to give some sort of direction of yes or no, or it points to whoever the problem is, or who's ever in sin. And so this is all we know about the tumim. Is the urim also do the same thing? We don't know. Did they take both of them and they just summed it up by saying tumim to mean both of them? We don't know. But we do know that at least the tumim is something that you throw on the ground, and the urim might be possibly the same thing, okay? There are those who think that that maybe the Urim is a stone that says black or white, so it answers yes or no, and that they take it out, and whatever shows in their hand, black or white, okay, that it will show, you know, yes or no answers. That's a possibility. That is definitely a possibility. But here's another example that's kind of interesting, and it's still here in 1 Samuel. I want you to go to 1 Samuel 23. Just go over to the right a little bit. In chapter 22, Saul is running around. He's looking for David. He wants to kill David. He finds out that David is in the area of Nob, okay, which is up on a hillside, which is also where the tabernacle is at that point. It's also where the high priest is as well. The other priests are there. And so Saul shows up. David has already left. Saul is upset that they had let David go, even though the priest didn't know that he was on the outs with Saul, and Saul was looking for him. And so Saul was mad. He says, kill all the priests. Well, nobody would do that. But Doeg the Edomite did. Okay, and so he kills all the priests, but before he can kill all of them, one of them escapes. His name is Abiathar. And so Abiathar escapes, and so if you read in verse 20 here, 1 Samuel 22, it says, now one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. So he goes to where David is, and David tells him in verse 23, stay with me. Do not fear, for he who seeks my life seeks your life, but with me you shall be safe. Okay? And then we see something very interesting that we haven't seen up until this point. In verse 1 it says, and they told David, saying, look, the Philistines are fighting against Calah, and they are robbing the threshing floors. And so David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the Lord said to David, go and attack the Philistines and save Calah. And so, but David's men said to him, look, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Calah against the armies of the Philistines? Then David inquired of the Lord once again. And the Lord answered and said, arise and go down to Calah. Okay, for I'm going to put the Philistines in your hands and so deliver them to you. Now, the reason I brought you here is because this is the first time that we see David inquiring of the Lord. I find it interesting he now can inquire of the Lord because he now has Abiathar there, who is now going to become his priest, and he has with him the ephod. Dave, how do you know he has the ephod? Because it says so in verse 9. Because I inquired of my own breastplate, and this is what the Lord told me. No. Verse 9 says, when David knew that Saul plotted evil against him, he said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here. What? So when Abiathar left, he grabbed the ephod, which would have the breastplate on it. Okay? So now he can inquire to the Lord, and this is how the Lord is speaking to him. Okay? This is how the Lord is speaking to him. He does this. Like 9 different times we read about this, but before this time, we don't read about how David has inquired of the Lord and the Lord is speaking specifically to him through the ephod, okay? But now we do. We see this here in 1 Samuel 23, verse 2 and 4. We see it in chapter 30, verse 8. We see it in 2 Samuel 2, 1, as well as in 2 Samuel 5, 19 and 23 and 21 and verse 1 and 1 Chronicles 14, 10 and verse 14. We see him inquiring of the Lord because he has the ephod there. And God is somehow speaking to him through the breastplate, which means Saul doesn't have the ephod. Now go over here to 1 Samuel 28. Saul wants to know, do I go up and face and fight the Philistines? And yet he's been disobedient to God, trying to kill David during this time and everything else. And this is the day before he dies on the battlefield. And this is right before he goes to the witch of Endor, okay? And we read here in verse 6, and when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him either by dreams or by Urim or by the prophets. Notice no word of the ephod there, but isn't the Urim and the Tumim supposed to be in the breastplate? It is. For some reason, it's separate. Somehow it's gotten separate. It doesn't say the Tumim is here, but it says Urim, and most people believe if you say Urim, you mean Urim and Tumim. Okay? Okay, possibly. But he doesn't have the ephod. David, as he's consulting through Abiathar, through the ephod, somehow the Urim is not there with it. They've separated it somehow, some way. Later on, we know that through Ezra and through Nehemiah, that I've already read you those verses, that later on they have the Urim and the Tumim, okay? And so they were saying, hey, until we get the priests here to tell us what to eat, what we can't, we're not going to do anything until they come and they can tell us through the Urim and the Tumim of what to do. Okay, so that's much later on. So eventually they get it all back together, but I just find it absolutely fascinating that he has the Urim, but he doesn't have the ephod. And yet God is still able to speak to him through the ephod, even though the Urim isn't with it. I say that all to say that's just the way it is. I don't know the reason behind it. I don't know why he can still receive from the breastplate, even though the Urim isn't with it, and why Saul has Urim, but he doesn't have the ephod. I don't know how it got separated, but somehow it must have, because David has the ephod right now. And yet, Saul's able to consult at least Urim, and it's not working for him. Okay, it's not working for him. Now, I had mentioned last week that I was going to do the deep dive on the breastplate. And every time I started to do this deep dive, I kept hitting my head on the shallow end. It would only go so deep, and then it would fall apart. And then I would look at this one, and it would go so deep, and then it would fall apart. And I would look at this, fall apart. And then I came across someone, I'm not going to mention his name, but someone that was trying to show that the those same stones that you see in Ezekiel 28 when it's speaking of Lucifer and having these coverings, he has a covering of 9 of the 12 stones that are mentioned here with the breastplate. And then this guy went on to say that God did not give him these other 3 stones as a covering in order to limit him, because he knew what God was going to do. And then he goes and deciphers these other 3 stones of and the meaning behind it of why God didn't give it to him, and those meanings completely fall apart when you actually look up the words. And so I was really excited for it. Wow, this sounds really good. And he says, this word means this word, and then I look up those words, and no, they don't. I have the best program around, you know, that discerns words. I have Logos. And so it tells you what the word means, and it shows you all these different commentaries and different lexicons and things like that, and they tell you what the word means as well, and not one of them means that, you know? And it's kind of like, what are you doing here? You seem to be creating your own understanding here. And so going through each of these stones, some say it's this, some says it's a red garnet, some says it's ruby, some say this, and you get all these rabbis, you get the Talmudic teachers, you get everybody, and you get 10 of them, they have 15 different opinions. And it's so hard to nail down. And so, but the interesting thing is that when it comes to Revelation 21 and those foundation stones, those, we know what these Greek words mean. We know what those stones are because we understand in the Greek what these actual stones are. But in the Hebrew, way back 3,500 years ago, it's really difficult to discern what that Hebrew word was for that stone, and that's why we have so many different opinions on it. Not so when it comes to the foundation stones of the New Jerusalem.
This Friday edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love has come to a close. Don't miss Monday as we continue our study through Exodus. If you're in Castle Rock or the surrounding area, we'd love to have you visit. You'll find us right near the actual Castle Rock on the corner of 5th and Woodlands. Our weekend services are Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 8:30 a.m. as well as 11 a.m. High schoolers will meet during the 8:30 service and junior high students during the 11 a.m. service. Childcare is available during all our weekend services. We also have a midweek study on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. At the same time, our kids' ministry runs Awana. And for young adults, our Arise ministry meets every Friday night at 6:30, right here at the church. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. We appreciate you spending time with us today. Until our next time together, we encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.